Public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 352, so we'll open up the public hearing on Senate Bill 353. Dennis?
The Senate Bill 353 lowers capital reserve requirement for health care service contractors who furnish only complementary health care services. It requires complementary health care service contractors maintain capital reserves equal to reserves maintained by dental services and optometrical services. Declares an emergency effective on passage. No revenue impact, no fiscal impact.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Arles. And witnesses. Well, welcome, sir. And please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Dave Barrows. With me today is Andrea Joya, who is the president of Complementary Healthcare Insurance. You have before you a background paper, just for those that are interested in learning a little bit more about complementary health care insurance, and the testimony which Ms. Joya, will provide the committee.
Hello. Thank you. Complementary health care insurance company provides fully insured plans to employer groups for complementary health care. Policy limits are small, similar to dental and vision plans, with the average benefit limit approximately $1,000. Since the liability for complementary health care resembles that of dental or vision, we're asking that the capital requirements be similar or the same, as opposed to the increased limits for health care service contractors. And actually,
I might add, Mr. Chair, that we have worked closely with the insurance division. Representative Mr. Latham from the insurance division is here, but we have been authorized to say that they are supportive of this legislation, that the language that's been developed meets their needs. They've worked very hard with us for more than a year to get the language in the shape that it's in before you today.
Okay, questions of the committee?
Very easy.
Walker, are you?
No, I'm okay. Sounds fine to me.
Sounds okay to you? Okay. Any comments? Any discussions? Well, we will close public hearing on Senate Bill 353 and open up a work session on Senate Bill 353. Discussions for the committee?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I move Senate Bill 353 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right. Senator Walker's moved Senate Bill 353 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any comments? Any discussions from the committee? Any objections? So ordered. Senator Walker, do you want to say that?
Sure.
All right. Very good. And so we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 353. And, the rest of our schedule today is for an informational hearing on the issue of self-insurance. And so we'll just open up an informational hearing with an information with an article. Today we'll do that. Open up the informational hearing on self-insurance, reinsurance. And Rob Douglas, would you like to come up? And we have several people. Do you have a particular order that you want people to come up in, or that you're?
I think the order that's on the list.
Is that okay? I got Eileen Drake and then John Hoffman.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Rob Douglas, representing the Oregon Self Insurers Association. Appreciate the chair and the committee's time today to talk about challenges facing those who are self-insured in Oregon. With me today on my left is Linda Barno, who is legislative chair for the Oregon Self-Insurers Association. Linda will speak to the issue briefly, and following Linda, we have several public and private employers who will briefly describe their experience in the current market environment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Linda Barno, and I'm the Workers' Compensation Manager appearing on behalf of the Schnitzer Steel Industries. Also joining me in the audience are Stan Smith, our Risk Manager, and Rosie Nee, Safety and Loss Control Director. We've submitted more detailed written testimony for your review and will at this time summarize our account and concerns. Schnitzer Steel Industries is a homegrown company started at the turn of the last century. In addition to our electric arc furnace steel mill in McMinnville, we have scrap steel recycling facilities in Portland, Eugene, Bend, Grants Pass, White City. Also, we are located in Oregon, California, and Washington with well over 600 employees. We're a family wage manufacturing company providing not only real wages but have a strong commitment to providing a comprehensive benefit package to our employees with the type of health and welfare benefits often mentioned as most desirable. We appreciate the opportunity to provide our background on this critical issue facing our company. Our purpose today is to talk about how workers' compensation excess issues affect our company and how reinsurance costs and availability affect the type of compensation and benefits we provide, as well as we all struggle to stay competitive in the ever-growing tough economic times. I'd like to give you a brief summary of what we've experienced in this arena. Prior to 2102, we had an excess policy for 3 years. The average cost was $90,000 per year, and our self-insured retention, which we sometimes refer to as a deductible, was $250,000 per occurrence. In November of 2001, our insurance broker, working on our policy renewal, informed us that the insurance market was volatile, with excess workers' compensation premiums seeing a dramatic increase. We were also informed that self-insured retentions would be increasing to a minimum of $500,000. In January of 2002, our insurance broker indicated that the initial annual premium predicted would be at least that we had paid for 3 years for a single year. We went to 11 markets, were contacted for renewal proposals, all except the incumbent insurer declined a quote. As a result, our one-year premium showed an increase of 655%, with our self-insured retention going up 200%. At first, we thought perhaps somehow just our industrial sector was being singled out by the reinsurance market, but we've come to learn it's an issue affecting a much broader segment. Virtually all employers in Oregon are facing this dramatic situation. Schnitzer Steel Industries is currently soliciting proposals for the 2003 renewal. At this time, we've been notified to be looking forward to an additional increase on the horizon. Clearly, affordability and availability of excess reinsurance has become a critical issue post 9/11. We have been looking within our state and elsewhere for a means to handle this situation. There is a model that's been working for 25 years, providing coverage, minimizing costs, and making sure the dollars are there for the injured worker. We believe that this warrants further evaluation and a recommendation from your committee. Oregon businesses are experiencing an unacceptable level of exposure for financial risk and a growing uncertainty as to the availability for this necessary product. This has a direct effect on our ability to do business. Employers need help in this current economy, and we ask for your assistance. Thank you.
Questions?
Yes, sir. Wait one second, Linda. Senator Beyer?
Thank you. Hi, Linda. Good to see you again.
Hi, Roger.
You said there's a model.
Yes. There's currently a model in the state of Minnesota that's been in place for 24 years.
Okay. Is Rob or someone going to provide that to us so we can take a look at it? Is it a bill drafted currently?
We'll be providing additional information on this model on the 26th.
Okay.
Yeah, we have another meeting set for a week from today.
And that's correct.
And I assume that's what's going to happen there.
That's correct, Senator.
Okay. Very good. Further questions? Okay. Well, why don't we bring up people in groups of threes? Eileen, Drake, John Hoffman, and William McMahon. Is that right? McMahon. Did I get that name right? How do you...
McMahon.
Yes. Okay, I'm close anyway. Well, welcome to the committee. And you have a particular order that anybody wants to go? Just remember to introduce yourself and proceed and inform us here.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Hoffman. I'm the Risk Operations Manager with the City of Portland. And I'd like to thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak before your committee today on the subject. Along with many employers in Oregon, the city has been shocked by the recent insurance market relating to workers' comp excess insurance. And although the city is not formally endorsing specific legislation at today's hearing, we would like to express our deep concern with the current situation and to encourage the serious exploration of alternatives. Now, we do recognize the need for efficiencies in the way we do business to do more with less. But the insurance market, it seems, is presenting the exact opposite scenario. They're offering less for more. That's less coverage for more money. Portland's experience is illustrated in the exhibits that I think you'll find in your packet. If you'd please turn to Exhibit A, you'll see the five-year trend in Portland's premium experience. And the increase in the July 2002 renewal, as you can see, was unprecedented. The premium shot up 422%. And that's from $67,000 to $350,000. The impact of this is significant. These higher costs mean less support for essential services that the city provides to the public, less for police officers, less for firefighters, less for community parks and other critical needs. Now, along with the rising costs, there's the reduction in coverage, and that's illustrated in Exhibit B. Again, you see the graph moving up very sharply with this last renewal. That's referring to the self-insured retention, or the SIR, which is the amount the city pays on a claim before the coverage kicks in. It was referred to as the deductible a little bit earlier. The city's SIR, as you can see here, doubled at this last renewal. It went from $750,000 to $1,500,000. Now, not only does this represent a dramatic reduction in coverage, but in fact, the city has never had a workers' compensation claim that has exceeded $1,500,000 in the entire history of our self-insurance program, and that's over a quarter of a century. And on top of all this, there was only one insurance carrier that this year that even offered the city a quote at all. And with the current situation, we can't just walk away from this. The self-insured employers are now required to purchase excess insurance to maintain their self-insurance certification, even if the insurance is uneconomical or unavailable. So what this means is that the insurance market can continue to charge skyrocketing premiums for less and less coverage, and the city has no choice but to buy it. Clearly, the current situation is untenable. We believe there must be a better way, and we would encourage the serious consideration of alternatives. Thank you.
There was one alternative. There's evidently a Minnesota model. Do you have any other alternatives or anything that you can suggest?
There's one other alternative that the city is interested in and is endorsing, and that is to exempt self-insureds under certain conditions from the requirement to purchase the excess insurance if it's uneconomical or unavailable.
Questions from the committee? Yes, Senator Walker.
Thank you. Mr. Hoffman, I've heard the same argument about how many more things you could buy from the city of Eugene when they were complaining about PERS. So I've heard that argument before, but it's a valid argument in that you do have less money. You don't really tell me why your insurance rates have gone up. I can assume that insurance companies are making a fortune, but I want to know why. Why did your rates go up?
Well, we don't think that there's a good reason for that, and that's why we feel that there's a need for an alternative. You know, as I indicated, what they're offering is a coverage that does not even touch anything in our experience over a quarter of a century. So, as far as that practical trend line is concerned, they're offering basically no coverage for an extremely high premium, and what, as it was suggested by the previous speaker, the expectation is that it will go up again very significantly. So it very well, from what we've heard from our broker, go up from $350,000 to $700,000 next year.
Well, we have a series of bills in judiciary on credit scoring. Maybe they're doing credit scoring on the city of Portland. That's just a commentary. Thank you.
I mean, the previous testimony indicated, you know, since 9/11, that there's just been this huge demand or huge discovery. That obviously has had some effect. And that happened 2 years ago. It still is in effect.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I think that there are some real dynamics in the insurance market that are at play here, and 9/11 is one, the recession is one, and those are definitely valid. But we've seen business cycles come and go, and what we see here seems out of all proportion, and that's the concern. It seems out of all proportion by a large measure.
Further questions?
Yeah, I'll wait till the other ones are done.
Okay.
They might answer something.
Who's going to be next here? Eileen?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Eileen Drake, and I am Vice President, Human Resources, for the PCC Structurals Division of Precision Castparts Corp. We, along with our parent corporation, Precision Castparts Corp., are headquartered in Oregon. In our division, we provide jobs for over 3,000 individuals. About 2,200 of those employees are in the state of Oregon, primarily in the Portland metropolitan area, but we do have one smaller plant in Redmond, Oregon. I also have provided prepared comments. I would like to address only 2 points. And let me pick up where Mr. Hoffman left off on what's happening in the insurance world, because I deal with this not only from the workers' compensation stop-loss perspective, but also from the health insurance perspective. We are in the process of going through renewals on our health insurance, and we are seeing outrageous increases in both areas. In each case, the insurance companies justify and rationalize their increases based not just on the individual experience rating of the employer, but on what is happening out there in the rest of the world. So in the stop-loss arena, every time you pick up an article, you are reminded again of September 11th and the costs to the insurance industry associated with September 11th. And the workers' compensation losses, I heard recently, were one of the biggest dollar volume losses, with workers' compensation claims coming not only from the direct victims of September 11th, but also from people who were indirectly affected by it across the country. And that is what the insurance industry is trying to cover, both the past losses associated with September 11th and the projected or feared future losses from future terrorist attacks, combined with, as Mr. Hoffman noted, the losses on the investment side for these companies. So when we go out to market, it's not just a question of what's happened in our individual workplaces recently, but what's happening out there in the rest of the world. And we cannot manage, frankly, what's happening out there in the rest of the world, yet we're being asked to pay for it. You will hear from some of the other witnesses that they've had very similar experience, and it's very obvious that the costing here in this arena is not tied to an employer's individual experience. In our own case, last year when we went out for renewal on our workers' comp stop-loss insurance, we were faced with the choice of doubling our premium or doubling our retention. We chose to double our retention. Similar to the city of Portland, we went from $500,000 to $1 million retention. Now, we've never had a claim that even approaches that. We hope to never have a claim that even approaches that. But we were not going to double our premium costs. We're out to renewal again right now for an April 1 renewal. We don't know whether we're going to have insurers willing to take us on. We don't know at what price they will take us on. But the trend in stop-loss insurance across the country is 20 to 50% increases. Now, our business is in two industries that have been very hard hit in the last 18 months. We provide parts, metal parts, castings to the commercial aerospace industry. We also provide metal casting parts to the industrial land-based gas turbine industry, which is power generation equipment. So we had September 11th followed by Enron. That has hit us very hard. We've been very fortunate. We have maintained market share in our industries. We will even increase our market share in the coming years in our industries. But 100% of less than you had before is still less. 100% of, you know, 60% of where the business was 18 months ago is still less than where we were 18 months ago. I mentioned that we have 3,000 employees. We used to have about 3,600 employees before September 11th in the state of Oregon, and we have similar problems across the country with our other divisions. What I am concerned about is that these increased dollars very directly tie to jobs for people. Our managers, in order to meet commitments to our customers, in order to maintain our market share, in order to keep our business a successful business, have been tasked with taking out 10% of the costs. So my budget is supposed to be 10%, not less than last year's budget, but 10% less than last year's costs, which were below budget. We kept ratcheting down our budgets. I'm expected to take 10% more out. Ours is a very labor-intensive industry. Taking 10% out doesn't mean cutting out the fat, doesn't mean eliminating chairs and orders for new chairs for conference room or training rooms. It means taking out jobs. I don't want to take out any more jobs than we've had to today. Thank you very much.
Okay, just a clarification so that we understand. When you talk about stop loss, could you define that? My definition might be different than yours. So.
Yes. We are self-funded for the basic claims, and it means that up to a certain point, in our case right now, $1 million, we pay all of the costs on the claims. If we go over $1 million, then the excess claims cost would be picked up by the stop-loss insurer. So that means that we are all paying hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, you know, to insure a remote risk that we could have a claim that would go over $1 million or over $1.5 million, whatever our retention is. Okay. And we are required by law to have that insurance, even though we may never touch a penny of it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Bill McMahon. I'm with Fleetwood Enterprises, based out of Riverside, California. We're the world's largest manufacturer of RVs and manufactured housing and have approximately 130 retail centers nationwide. Fleetwood employs approximately 14,000 people. There is a typo here. We employ approximately 900 associates in the state of Oregon that are located at our locations in Woodburn, LeGrand, and Pendleton, Oregon. My associates here have painted a very accurate picture of what is happening, not just only in this state, but nationwide. And rather than just follow my notes here, because we are multi-state, we're self-insured in 9 states. We have a normal insurance policy, quote normal, with $1 million deductible in the remaining 9 states that we operate in. I've been had the opportunity to visit Maryland, Georgia, and North Carolina, as well as Oregon this year, and California regarding this issue and collateral issues. Because of 9/11, Enron, WorldCom, the losses that are being suffered in the insurance world as a result of all these things are being suffered by the reinsurers. And that's what we're talking about here, pure reinsurance. Fleetwood has been self-insured here since 1976. We've never had a claim. And if you look at the workers' compensation excess analysis there, our cost per associate in the last 4 years has gone from $18 to $78 per associate. Our premium has gone from $400,000 to well over $1.1 million. And that's with a reduction in number of associates from 21,500 to almost 14,000. So if you extrapolate that out, we could be at $2 million this year. Okay, for a coverage where we have filed one claim in all these states in the history of our existence since 1950. And I want to address Senator Walker's issue because she raises the question, how can this be? Okay? What we are encountering is CFOs or risk managers or companies as a whole with insurance costs does not have any relation to what our claims experience is. We're not a bad employer. Our Woodburn plant here in Oregon actually just went 1 million hours without a lost time injury. We've reduced our frequency nationwide as a company because we set that goal by 50% over the last 3 years. And our costs are going through the roof. And I think that's the picture we're trying to paint for you today. It's not that our claims are going up and therefore our insurance costs are going up. They're going up because the reinsurers have suffered catastrophic losses from 9/11 on. And they're trying to recover bad underwriting that occurred in the mid to late 90s. No investment income to offset those losses. And that's what insurance companies are about. They offset those losses with investment income. There is none now. Okay? So if we have a claim that attaches in an excess layer, look at the premium we've paid since we've been here since 76. Never have attached a single claim to this state. So in ending, I mean, you know, I think that what's occurred in the last 2 years that you're going to find out if you look at this presentation is price is an issue now. Price has gone up dramatically every year for the last 3 years. What we're going to get to in the next 18 months is going to be availability issue. And we'll be coming back to talk to you about the fact that we can't get it, because that's the direction that it's going. We were informed last week that our reinsurer, Employers Re, who's one of the biggest in the country, is pulling out of the state of California. They're no longer going to write the excess cover there. That will be the next step. Will be an availability issue at any price. At any price. And we're already reaching that in some of the states that we're in, where the laws are you know, more liberal, the state of Texas, Tennessee, where you don't have a specified work comp jurisdiction overseeing claims, it may not be available.
Okay. Senator Metz.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. John and Bill, you have both addressed this, and I think you may want to as well. I think you just did. Just for the record, to maybe have a more extensive discussion on this. John, you mentioned the inability of the city to, you know, find others who would underwrite your insurance need. You just said the same thing. People point out not able to do that. In your own assessment of dealing with this issue, what do you think are the primary driving factors of the inability to find those who would provide quotes for your businesses in this or the municipality? What do you think the driving force is, the fact that they don't want to offer any type of quote for you?
I'll speak from a private standpoint. I think that that insurance carriers have limited capacity today. They have a certain amount of money that they have out there that they can support the exposure on, and capacity is limited. So you might be able to get a piece of it insured, but we're going to find out that you're going to need, you know, in this case, you've got one single excess insurer. And I'm going to bring up just another issue that's not related to this, but I think the analogy is good. Directors and officers coverage. which would be coverage that would be in place for the Enron directors and officers, the WorldCom directors and officers, the Kmart directors and officers. You used to be able to go to an insurance carrier and get $25 to $50 million in capacity. Now you're lucky to get 5, maybe 10. So you have to start taking these individual insurers and stacking them up on top of each other to get the insurance that you need. And that explains it. It's a capacity issue. Their ability to actually offer you the coverage, again, at any price.
John, Eileen, do you have any other thoughts on that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Metzger, I would agree with that, and I would just add one of the things that we sometimes see is underwriters look at classes of business, and they may look at municipalities as a whole. And when they're looking at New York City, and they're looking at Los Angeles, and they're looking at Portland in that same pool, that puts us at a great disadvantage and a very inappropriate comparison in terms of the exposure and type of risk.
Again, our experience is similar. The insurance companies are making much narrower decisions about what risks they want to take on. They seem to have fewer dollars to put at risk, and so that's leading to more declinations of coverage. I mean, we are experiencing the same kind of factor in the workers' comp arena and in the healthcare arena with insurance companies simply saying that they're not interested in doing business with us at any price. So it's not even that you get an opportunity to negotiate over what you're going to pay for it. They're simply refusing to talk to us.
Just followed in on a couple of other points that collectively made. You're talking about future risks and risks that that you believe in a certain pool, whatever the insurer has decided to assign to you. I get the feeling that, at least John, with you, for example, that some of this risk assessment that may contribute to the increased premium, you believe is both unfair in terms of and unrealistic in terms of the liability that was actually being incurred that you would be asked to pay for. Is that a correct assessment of what you said?
That's correct.
What about also? We know that, like a lot of us, investments haven't been good the last few years. But you also made a mention that, you know, part of this undercapitalization or lack of capitalization to provide insurance may have come also from, you know, losses that insurers have had as well in their investment portfolio, and that in order to compensate for that, premiums are also going up. Is that something that you would say you've experienced in terms of dealing with your insurer, especially on the private sector? Do you think you're being asked to pay for that more than your loss potential?
I think we're clearly being asked to pay for much that has no relationship to our loss potential. And I'm not going to say that that's unfair. I recognize that insurance companies like us are businesses. They are in business to make money for their investors, for their owners. And so I don't know that I can fault them for what they are doing. I think we can look at it and say this is the time then to ask whether it really makes sense for us to be required to carry a level of insurance. If I can use an analogy, we have a small home out near the coast. We are required to carry flood insurance by our mortgage company. Okay, the odds of a flood out there are very low, but we're paying $800 a year just in case there is a flood. So the state of Oregon is saying to us, you are required to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars a year just in case you have one workers' comp claim that goes over $1 million or over $1.5 million, depending upon what your retention level is. Is this a good use of our money? You know, with even without regard to the state of the stop-loss insurance industry, does this make financial sense for us to have to do this if we can come up with an alternative that says, look, if you're worried about the injured worker, here's how we protect the injured worker against the employer that goes out of business or doesn't have the financial ability to pay on this expensive claim. And the essence of workers' comp insurance is that it's capped. Okay, your claims costs are no. We had the very tragic, unfortunate experience of having a death in our workplace a couple of years ago, something that no one would ever want to have happen. And we had several other employees who were involved in that who were injured because they tried to help the employee who died. The claims for that incident, total exposure, is $750,000 over a period of years. We're not even going to touch the stop loss in that situation. So why are we paying insurance for something that we are highly unlikely ever to need?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I can appreciate what you said. I do know this flood insurance, too. And not only has the homeowners and the flood insurance gone up tremendously this year, some of you probably have experienced, too, but the flood, I think, is almost as much as the basic policy, which, by the way, doesn't cover water now and mold and some other things. So, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Byron. Okay, thank you very much. We appreciate
you. Thank you.
We have Bill Sherratt. Andrea Marzette and Karen Fry. Hope I pronounce all your names right, so correct me when you're up for the record. When you start. And welcome to the committee. And do we have any particular order here we want to go in?
The ladies first, or I'll go and lead the way, whatever.
It's yours.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members, for allowing us to testify today. I'm the president and CEO of Barrett Business Services. We've been doing business in Oregon since 1971. We currently have...
Your name also, Bill.
Bill Charay.
Charay, so we get it right. Okay.
We currently have 2,000 to 3,000 being in the staffing business. It varies some statewide with an average pay rate of $11 per hour, paid vacations, paid holidays, retirement, group health, and we're publicly traded. About 50% of our business is in the staffing business. 50% is in the human resource business for small companies. We have approximately 200 to 300 small companies that rely on us to provide their benefits, to provide safety in the workplace for them, to run their payroll, and generally make them a better employer. Our workman's comp mod is 0.71, mod meaning an average is 1. If you're worse than the average, you would have higher than 1. If you're better than the average, you would have less than 1. We've been self-insured for workers' compensation since 1987. We presently have $2.3 million on deposit with the state of Oregon, which is required to be self-insured. Our retention levels have risen from $350,000 in the last 2 years to $750,000. Our premiums have risen from $200,000 a year. The last 2 years, we now pay $1.3 million for that coverage. We've had one loss in the 16 years that we've been self-insured. It was a large loss. It was tragic. It was a paraplegic. The ultimate cost of that claim will be somewhere around $3 million, and it'll be paid out over the next 30 years. That's what's... After we paid the initial $350,000, the reinsurer will have to pay the rest over that period of time. From my point of view, the $1.3 million leaves the state of Oregon. In fact, it goes to Chicago, and it never returns in any form here other than to pay for a tragic loss. It is my belief that the state mandates this coverage for the protection of the employees and the state. Then the state has an obligation to make sure the markets for these coverages are open and competitive. Should you folks decide to move forward with this, and should it get to a point of passage, I will almost guarantee you, knowing what I know about the insurance markets, the retentions will come down and the rates will come down rather dramatically. As it is right now, they have a locked market, and the people who are going to oppose this want to keep it that way. I think there are some major issues having to do with 9/11 and the conventions that these people had, but basically they have a locked market and they're just dictating terms. I am very surprised, to be frank about it, that an entrepreneurial insurer hasn't come in, because the market is wide open for somebody to do that. having studied the Minnesota plan and the profitability that's been returned to the employers and the money that is stayed in that state, I think that's a very viable plan that should be looked at very carefully. You've had a very successful self-insurance program run by the state here in Oregon. I think it's excellent. You have the SAFE Corporation here, while at times the quasi-public entity and us have crossed swords, but they do keep the market competitive so that there is always an alternative in which people can go and get a quote to find out where they stand on their own merits. In the situation, I believe now, and I think you'll hear it pretty consistently, there is no competition for this insurance. There is nobody willing to write it at any. It's almost, if I didn't know better, think it was a monopolistic collusion. That's what it appears to be, because the rates are all virtually quoted at the same. We had three quotes this last year on renewal, and I was shocked to learn that they were exactly all the same. And I thought, well, how can that be? I mean, I would, you know, you would expect to see a little difference. So I think it's a good program, and I think you have the major employers from Oregon are going to be speaking here today. And it's an opportunity, I believe, for the state of Oregon to create jobs at virtually no cost to the state and still protect employees. I think it's a win-win-win all the way around. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Karen Frey, and I'm the Director of Risk Management for TriMet. TriMet, as many of you know, is a municipal corporation that provides public transportation for much of the three counties in the Portland metropolitan area. We operate a 38-mile light rail track, 100 bus routes. We provide service for seniors and people with disabilities. We've developed partnerships to provide innovative service. We employ nearly 3,000 people. Like these other folks, as a self-insured employer, we are required to carry excess workers' compensation coverage. Over the course of the last 10 years, we've paid an average of $72,000 a year for excess coverage. This last year, last July, our premium increased from $72,000 a year to up to $129,000 a year. At the same time, our self-insured retention went from $400,000 per loss to $750,000 per loss. TriMet enjoys an excellent safety record. We've never pierced the $400,000 self-insured retention, let alone the $700,000 retention, yet we still see these increases in coverage and the lack of availability of coverage. TriMet supports exploration into a state reinsurance fund for Oregon self-insured employers or other alternatives to the current self-insured market.
Andrea. Chair Nelson and members of the committee, my name is Andrea Marzetti. I am the risk manager for the Port of Portland. The port owns and maintains 5 marine terminals, 4 airport, and 7 business parks. The port directly hires 800 employees. However, port-related businesses creates approximately $1.7 billion in direct earnings for workers and $4.5 billion in business revenues annually, and port-related businesses is responsible and affects, or at least affects, 1 in 6 jobs in the Portland metropolitan area. Therefore, ensuring the existence of an affordable and available workers' compensation insurance market is important for the port as well as our many business customers and associates. I won't go into a prepared statement because much of what I've said has been presented before. However, I will say from statistical point of view, the port, our premium experience in workers' compensation, excess workers' compensation insurance, has generally reflected that of our other presenters here today and the insurance market in general. In the mid-90s, we experienced fairly stable premiums dictated by the investment earnings, which were high for the insurance carriers. We were affected by the September 11th incident also.
1999 and again in 2000, we were actually able to reduce our excess workers' compensation program approximately 10% per year. And again, that was due to the high investment earnings that insurance companies were receiving, which again reflected in lower rates to the customers. Like most of the companies here, I would imagine the port rode the investment market out, and we were able to lower premiums. However, again, the low premiums, like the high premiums, does not directly reflect the port's experience. We have had two claims and three employees involved in those claims where the claims exceeded the $1 million self-insured amount. However, in each case, it was approximately 25 years before we pierced the $1 million layer. We believe that through sound and underwriting practices and sound investment practices and financial management, that there were other ways available to the port, perhaps, for paying those claims and assuring the level of benefits to our workers that the state requires and that the port desires. We do believe that there is potential merit to cost savings for employers, the employees, and the general public in Oregon through another mechanism, and we ask your indulgence and your support in helping us look for those alternatives. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Yes, Senator Metzger.
Thank you. Bill, I appreciated your perspective. I'm curious as to your own evaluation as to the entrepreneurial aspect that you mentioned, that you were surprised that someone didn't see a market that was potentially valuable here and not engaging in offering this reinsurance. What is your own perspective as to why we haven't perhaps seen someone do that?
You know, I don't know whether the treaties in these big reinsurance markets, typically they're layering their insurance and they're doing it with Lloyd's and lots of others. They're not taking the full brunt. And whether or not there is somebody forming in the Bahamas, typically where a lot of these companies form their insurances out of the Bahamas and these reinsurance, whether they can't put enough together or they don't even know it, you know, Oregon relative to the rest of the world is a pretty small market. And whether they don't even know we exist at this point, and that would be kind of my guess, that when they're dealing with Chrysler and Ford and General Motors and you know, all the major corporations of America, in which almost every one of them is self-insured, we may be just kind of small potatoes to them at this point, although it's obviously very big potatoes to us. I think that's, as I said earlier, I think, too, that if they get wind of what's going on out here, my guess is things will change very quickly. But I further believe that it would be just a great investment for the state. I would just as soon, even if I had the same levels now of having that money stay here in Oregon. I think it's rare that the business community comes to the state and says, we'd like to get you in the business. And I don't know that I've seen that before. But I think it's to the point where the employers are saying, oh, wait a minute, this is really, really unfair. And if you were to have the state were to take, it might take 5 or 6 years to build up the kind of reserve funds, but the experience that's happened in the state of Minnesota is just overwhelming. And you'll get that testimony next week that really talks about that model. And then I think that money should stay here personally.
Mr. Chair, follow up?
Yes.
On that issue, a number of you and the witnesses before were talking about, in order to try and, you know, maintain some type of fiscal sanity with your own budgeting, that you have raised you know, both your retention, you know, levels for your reserves in order to try and keep your costs down for reinsurance, and even though some of you have experienced not even reaching the retention level that you have set independently. And if you had access to reasonable market reinsurance, for your businesses, what would that do to your own ability to free up capital that you now, you know, are pledging for, you know, additional retention reserves and or paying, you know, for the additional reinsurance? Would that enable you to retain more working capital within your own businesses if you had access to a better reinsurance market and how you plotted your own insurance level?
I can't speak for you, but I can, you know, when money leaves like that, at that level, it means that maybe we don't expand into other parts of the state, that we don't pay as well. Certainly we don't pay our people as many bonuses. I mean, it affects our bottom line, and all of our people are involved in bonuses on the profitability of the company. So it's, you know, if you want to get to the Republican point of view, it's a trickle-down deal. Well, it truly is. For every dollar that leaves on the outgo for more reinsurance, and if there isn't really a reason behind it, the market will only bear so much cost, and at some point you have to take it from pocket A and put it in pocket B, and that's really kind of, I think that's what you've been hearing from others here.
Anybody else want to comment on that?
Yes,
that
Senator.
Did capital.
Yes, Senator Metzger. I would agree. Certainly, the lesser the premiums we pay, the more revenues we have to devote to other purposes. I would also like to make the comment that I think that there's another side to the issue. Most of us are, all of us are self-insured employers, and one of the reasons we've chosen to self-insure is because we believe that through self-insurance there is the capability of stabilizing our premiums over the long run. The port, as I think I indicated before, and many of the other self-insured employers here, we weighed the prospect of insuring in the commercial market when the primary rates are low. And we felt that over the long run, we can better manage our investments into our workers' comp benefits. And I think we'll find the same experience here on the excess or reinsurance side. So I would encourage, I would suggest that the benefit to the state of Oregon by keeping the premium dollars in state, perhaps eventually going, maybe being able to provide some payback to the employers in the form of what do you call it?
Dividends.
is a potential, and I think in the long run, even though we have to deal with the effects of the economy, I think there's some real potential for providing dividend and increasing the attractiveness of Oregon as a place of business.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you coming down and testifying. We have Paul Cosgrove and Steve Delfer. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Paul Cosgrove, and I'm representing the Reinsurance Association of America. And I have to disclose at the beginning that you really are seeing the second string. Brad Kading, the Senior Vice President of the Reinsurance Association of America, will be here at your hearing next week. And he was, in fact, in the state last week dealing with this issue for a variety of reasons, not the least of which was some snow on the East Coast. It wasn't possible for him to get back for today's hearing. You're being handed some materials. Mostly they were done by Mr. Kading, but what I'll try to do is walk through some of them briefly and try to respond to a couple of issues that I've heard raised so far. One is, why are we in this situation? How did we get here? Discuss the costs issue, the increased cost, the availability of insurance issue. And then maybe at least briefly touch on our perspective on solutions, although I recognize that the solution issue is really for next week. The third page in, uses a phrase that I think you've heard from another witness, current hard market conditions. And in fact, the written testimony from the witness from the Port of Portland, I think, makes the point even better than this kind of a chart does. In the port's experience in the late 90s, not only were insurance premiums not going up much, in fact, they were being reduced. And that's one of the factors that has caused the problem that occurred in 2001-2002. We had a very competitive market and a lot of cost cutting, and in fact premiums for many insureds went down. I'll have some charts later here to show that over time and how that's happened. The second thing though is really very specific to 2001, and that first bullet point in 2001 underwriting summary of all reinsurers in the property casualty area, so that's beyond just workers' comp, but it includes workers' comp, there's 140% combined ratio. The combined ratio is the amount of dollars paid out in claims divided by the amount of dollars taken in premiums. So for every dollar of premium in 2001, reinsurers paid out $1.40 in claims. Obviously an unsustainable practice, and it's reflective of the tragic events of September 11th. The current estimate of the property casualty loss is upwards of $50 billion for that one day, of which about $30 billion is being absorbed by reinsurers in the United States and worldwide, because it is a worldwide market. One of the advantages of having a worldwide market is we can spread the risks of something from New York City literally worldwide. This combined ratio does not take into account investment earnings, and when I get to the charts in a minute, I'll show how that, I think, affects it. But obviously, in 2001, we all know there weren't really any investment earnings to offset that. The second bullet mentions that in 2002, through the third quarter, that combined ratio has dropped to 115%. By the way, the 140% is historically the highest level it's ever been since records were kept. 115% is on the upper end, but going in the right direction. What has happened in the market, and there was some talk about formation of new companies and entrepreneurial issues. In fact, there's $30 billion of new capital that came into the reinsurance market in 2001-2002, including 8 new reinsurers formed in Bermuda alone, and that is the location of one of the reinsurance markets. There are U.S. reinsurers, Caribbean reinsurers, and European reinsurers. So what Morgan Stanley, who is not us, they're looking at us as investment people, says their commentary on the changes is the problems that have caused this market to occur are 5 factors: the World Trade Center losses, which I just mentioned, the recession, the collapse of the capital markets, which we've all discussed, some additional very big reserves that were made in the market in property casualty and reinsurance for asbestos claims, which people had thought were on their tail end, and there's now a second generation of its asbestos defendants, causing us to reexamine how much that eventual liability will be. And then the soft market years, and by that I mean the market years in which we sold insurance for a very competitive price, shall I say. This next chart, and there are 2 pages of it, take from 2001 back to 1982 and show that combined ratio again. That's the ratio of dollars paid out over dollars taken in for premiums. And you can see historically 141% was from this particular document. There's a slight difference from the 140% I said on the prior page. You see back in the 90s, they're all in the range of 100 and 102 and 107. That, when you take into account investment earnings, means a profitable year. That's why there was price cutting in the market in terms of premiums. And then you go back, if you sort of flip the page from 92, but more importantly to the big years of 84, 85. And what happened in 84, 85 is, unfortunately, a similar but much smaller tragedy to the World Trade Center. Those are the hurricane years. That's the years of Andrew and several other hurricanes, which until this World Trade Center event was the largest single loss in U.S. insurance history. So what I think this shows is that the market sometimes suffers and stumbles quite badly when huge events happen. And we've just had the most huge event happen, the most tragic event happen. But eventually it recovers and for most of the time stays in a more stable situation. And based at least on third quarter data for last year, we hope that we are, for everyone's sake, our own insurers' sake as well, returning to that era of stability. There's some particular data next about the workers' compensation part of the general property casualty market, and basically the factors are essentially the same. A great deal of the loss at the World Trade Center was a workers' compensation loss, unfortunately, the lives lost. But there are some factors about workers' compensation that make pricing it a little bit more difficult, and although this is a terribly difficult chart to read because it came from a color slide and my printer doesn't do color. The printer I used. Suffice to say, the last line, the bottom line on that chart is workers' compensation. The other three kinds of insurance are the three top lines. What that reflects is that initially in the number of years after the claim is reported, in most kinds of insurance, automobile liability, medical malpractice, you find out what your total losses are going to be pretty quickly in the next couple of years after the event. The exception to that rule is workers' comp, where even as far out as 20 years, you may only know about what 80% of your loss is going to be. It is, in other words, an area of insurance where pricing it on a year-by-year basis is more difficult because of some uncertainties in the future and the length of time it takes to acknowledge those claims. The other chart, again, and I apologize for the quality, the bottom line is the reinsurer, the top line is the primary insurer. If you're not in a self-insured situation, you still probably have a reinsurer. What you have is a primary workers' comp policy, and that policy company probably itself buys reinsurance. And this is the situation that this chart shows. And it reflects the percentage of the ultimate claim that's going to be paid out, recognized by the reinsurer within a 10-year period versus the primary insurer. So the obligation of the reinsurer comes and is recognized later. And I think that's logical in that the reinsurer only takes claims above a certain amount, and claims don't get to be recognized to be above that amount necessarily right away until some period of years. So again, that's part of the difficulty. This next chart shows the combined ratios for workers' comp insurers, including workers' comp reinsurance. And you can see really the same pattern as I showed you earlier for the general property casualty. We only have a few years data, about 5 years data here rather than the 20 years data. But again, you can see in the 90s, relatively stable, moving up in 99, 2000, and then hitting a peak in 2001, an estimated figure, and then moving down in 2002, another estimated figure. So although solutions is really next week's subject, there are many things that I think can be done short of what you've heard about, what little you heard about the Minnesota model, that in fact are important that we would like to work with everyone in this state and elsewhere on. First of all, it's a very basic issue. Prevention in the workers' comp area is the best solution. And I think many of the companies in Oregon show a stellar record in that area, but there's always more things to learn and more things to do. And there are some things that sometimes we can sit down and work with folks and insurers with their insureds and their excess carriers with their self-insureds to try to improve an already good track record in the prevention of injury area. Second is documentation, and this is one that I think is particularly important. You heard repeatedly, and it's true, that a lot of workers' comp excess insurance is based on what's happening elsewhere. And part of that is we rate based on pools, the kind of employees you have and the kind of risks they face nationwide or even further, perhaps. There is the ability to get that rating dropped based on your own experience. And I'll talk about in the creative coverages point one specific way. But I was talking to some people in preparing for this who, in fact, market both reinsurance and excess insurance in the workers' comp area, and they have been successful by taking with their clients and having them gather the data to show their stellar performance in safety and have that fed in to affect rates in a positive way. And I guess the summary of what's happening absent that happening in terms of the documentation and speaking to insurers and excess insurers is you will be treated as an average risk unless you can show you're not an average risk, you're above average risk. And the feeling is that at least some, perhaps not the people you've heard from today, but with some Oregon and every other place employers, we need to do a better job of documentation. You will get better rates with that. The third bullet is creative coverages. The self-insurance system in this state, and I think it's not too different in other states, requires the self-insured employer to do a lot of things because they're assuming the risk of the first chunk of the claims and all of the costs of the claims administration and payment. Bonds and other financial assurances, excess insurance at rates set by the department, the Workers' Compensation Division, and all sorts of other things. And the reason, I think, the policy reason for that is if you're going to accept that risk as an individual company, we have to make sure that the money will be there if you go out of business. And that's a logical policy. There are things that, in fact, function very similarly to self-insurance, financially at least, but aren't self-insurance, and they're called large deductible workers' comp policies. What happens there, the credit risk that the state is having you, the self-insurers make sure that they send in their financial statements and are they going to be solvent, that whole credit assessment is done by the insurer, and the insurer assigns a rating for the credit risk and a rating for the loss, and you get the benefits of having a huge deductible, but if the company isn't there, the state doesn't have to worry about those bells and whistles because the insurer pays for what the company would have paid for in the self-insurance context. There are also some new policy, or I don't know that they're new exactly, and there are people behind me that I think have far greater knowledge in this than I, but called retro rating, where you, instead of rating businesses in a pool of similar businesses, you set the first year's premium based on the pool, and the next year's premium is based on last year's experience, wholly or in part. You can have partly retrorated, fully retrorated. Most policies are not retrorated, but that option is there. I asked the question of my folks, are these options well known? And the answer I got is probably not well known. We've had a soft market until this huge change to a very dramatic hard market. And we need to be better communicating to our customers and working with them, and they need to be more creative with us in trying to look and see if some of these solutions, in fact, can be part of the solution to the problem. And then the last bullet is competition. You haven't heard much about the Minnesota market, but the Minnesota model just takes the market out of it. It just creates a one fund segmented to a state, keeps all the risk here. If the World Trade Center were here, all of that risk would have been paid here. We believe that even in hard markets and coming out of hard markets, let alone in soft markets, that the competition amongst this very vibrant reinsurance and excess insurance capability in the country and in the world is what is the best way to keep those rates down. Does it always keep the rates down? No. When there's a combination of factors like the insurance industry and the country as a whole faced since September 11th, It won't be enough to keep rates down. But over the long term, will it do so? We think the combination of being option of being self-insured with excess, insured through SAFE, insured through private insurer, and having that competition, having the ability to choose to reinsure or not to reinsure for insurers is the best way to keep that market in control. I'd be glad to answer any questions, although I want to repeat that you do have the second string, so you may exceed my capacity, and if so, I will promise to get answers back to you no later than next week when the issue comes back before the committee. Thank you very much.
Steve?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Steve Telfer. I represent the Alliance of American Insurers. Paul is second string. I'm probably third string here. I learned about this hearing yesterday morning and called the Alliance back in Chicago, and they were kind enough to send me or fax to me some general background information. The Alliance is a trade association of just a little over 300 property casualty insurers, and also, by the way, includes some reinsurance members. What they provided to me, I have kind of distilled into some little factoids on the first page, and then if you turn over, you'll note that there are two attachments. The first attachment is kind of an interesting online version of a report put out by AM Best in their newspaper about a presentation that our president, Roger Lawson, made last month to the National Press Club, talking a little bit about this so-called hard market and some of the factors behind it. So I've excerpted some comments from that. The second piece is a attachment two is a paper prepared by our research department titled What's Driving Current Rate Increases, and has some kind of interesting things in it. And it's I would bore you to tears if we were trying to work through it now, so I would advise you to look at that at your leisure. In a nutshell, I think 1997 points out as the year that's kind of the turning point. And I know the tragic events of 9/11 have had huge impact, but the bottom line is really in 1997 we found prices really start to turn the corner and the market to stiffen up after a period of 5 or 6 years where it was a relatively soft, very competitive market. In 2000, prices, premiums rose 5.1%. They went up in 2001 to 8%, and I should point out that was before 9/11. The companies preparing their rates for filing for December and January renewals were actually already talking about 8% to 9% premium increases. Then 9/11 happens, and you can see the result. In 2002, they went up 13%. Now, I'm not talking about any individual company. I'm talking about aggregate numbers here that represent the entire industry across the country. And so none of these are company-specific, obviously. I think it's important to note that from 97 to 2001, the claims rate increased to an average of 9.5% per year. The premiums only went up 3.6% per year. And, of course, that yields a combined ratio, as Paul described in his testimony, that is greater than 100. The object is to try to get that combined ratio below 100. Insurance companies, as the previous witness said, are businesses. They're in business to make money and to return a reasonable return to their shareholders. Unfortunately, the rate of return in the insurance industry is, in fact, over the last couple of years, has been an actual loss of 2 to 3%, negative return of 2 to 3%. Ideally, because the industry competes like all other businesses with Fortune 500 companies and so on, and are attempting to attract capital in the form of stock investments, if you're only getting a negative return, it's pretty hard to compete. And so the industry typically would want to see a 10 to 12% return on its investment, just like any other good business. The combined ratio needs to get close to 100, as I think Paul showed on his chart, and I think we would agree across the board in the property casualty industry that our predictions would be that we'll be somewhere in the 103 to 104% for this year. I think there are encouraging signs that the economy may well start to slowly recover. I don't see dramatic changes, but slowly recover. And assuming, knock on wood, no further major catastrophes or terrorist activities, then I think things will tend to right themselves, and hopefully this hard market will begin to become a little bit more competitive again. I think it's interesting to make an observation here about investment income. Some of the previous witnesses talked about fears that the insurance companies were trying to get whole by charging higher premiums because of loss in investments. In the P&C industry, and I think the latest data that we're aware of is 2000, 64% of those insurers' investments were in bonds, either government or corporate bonds. 18% were in the stock market, in equities, and the remaining 20, whatever, my math isn't current here, would be in real estate and other investments. Interestingly enough, the bonds, because they're such a huge chunk of those investment portfolios, have traditionally, and they're usually laddered over a period of years, have had pretty high rates. Those maturities will gradually, or those investments will gradually mature, and unfortunately, because of our current economic malaise, they're going to have to be replaced with government bonds that are at a much lower rate. And so that's going to put some pressures on the insurance industry as we move forward. Obviously, also, in 2001, a lot of companies had to sell their equity investments. And so they had a very significant portfolio, or capital loss, if you will, which had an impact. But interestingly enough, the research we've done indicates that this whole investment area really only has had about a 4% impact on premium. So it isn't as big as I think a lot of people have assumed that it is. Cost drivers, again, little excerpts that I picked up out of both papers. Significant increases in million-dollar plus jury awards. Roger Lawson in this Best Line article is quoted as saying there's some jury verdict studies that have gone on, and it goes through a whole series of different lines of insurance and what's happened with significant increases in jury awards that are well above million. And of course, that impacts dramatically the claims paid out. As Paul indicated, asbestos has reemerged and is now causing some grief. Medical inflation costs. I think we're all painfully aware of what's going on that area. This I found very interesting. Expectations of high potential catastrophe losses as populations move out towards the coasts. Well, what goes on with the coasts? The West Coast, we have earthquakes. East Coast, we have hurricanes. And as you get put more and more population into those centers, obviously the aggregate losses they face, or the risks, are much higher. I think somebody earlier mentioned Enron and the other corporate governance issues. That's just totally upset the directors and officers insurance market. That's going to take a while, I think, to recover. And obviously all of this relates to, it gets fed right through, as Paul indicated, to the high cost of reinsurance. So that's kind of a bleak picture I'm painting, but that's based on our analysis of what in fact is going on, and I do feel optimistic about the future. I think, like every other cycle, this one too shall improve, but it will take time. I'll be happy to respond to questions.
Hey, Liz, somebody wants to sit there for a second. Eileen Drake may have a response, so we might as well have some discussions. Eileen, sure. Would you like to come up? You guys want to sit there, or we want to go back? Whatever you want to do is fine.
All right. Pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. I should start with a disclosure that I am a lawyer, so if you want me to stop talking, just tell me to do so.
Point counterpoint, eh?
Okay. The gentleman who just finished talking, I think, made our point about the fact that we're being asked to pay for a whole series of losses that have absolutely nothing to do with our workers' compensation claims. And talking about jury awards, talking about hurricanes, talking about earthquakes, talking about the September 11th events, everything that he mentioned, even the asbestos, has absolutely nothing to do with Oregon workers' compensation insurance obligations on the part of employers. The gentleman to my left, and I'm sorry, I cannot recall your name, you made a number of comments about possible solutions and things that employers could be doing to cut their costs, to lower their costs. Frankly, I find those suggestions insulting because we are doing them. We have been doing them for some time. We have accident prevention programs in place in our workplaces, and our claims have gone down and our claims costs have gone down over the last several years. We spent last year $700,000 in the Portland area in our four Portland plants on return to work light duty for our injured workers, getting them back to work, getting them off of time loss, and bringing them back into the workplace, because that's where we want them, back at work with us. And we have budgeted a similar amount for this coming year for return to work programs, even while we're cutting other types of costs. The idea of arguing our individual loss record with the reinsurers, what do you think we do? We aggressively argue our own individual loss record to the reinsurers. And the idea of high deductible third party insurance, we are doing it outside of Oregon in our corporation. The deductible this year for our workers' comp insurance is $750,000. It has not had any noticeable impact on our stop loss coverage. And even if it did, we frankly like being self-insured. We like spending our own money, having responsibility for dealing with our injured workers' claims, working directly with them because they are our employees. And we don't want to abdicate and delegate the responsibility for claims management to somebody who may be sitting in another state and knows nothing about us and knows nothing about our employees. It is the best way to handle your workers' compensation claims if you can afford to do that. And the reason that we band together in the Oregon Self-Insurance Association and we work together is to exchange ideas on how to be effective in dealing with our workers' compensation claims and dealing with our injured workers in getting them back to work as quickly as we can. Thank you.
Okay, any response, or any?
Only I just want to make clear that I didn't mean...
Call your name first.
Oh, Paul Cosgrove. that Oregon employers aren't doing a good job. I think the track record in general is that Oregon employers are doing a very good job, an increasingly good job. I do not believe with all Oregon employers it's true that they have yet found the ways to effectively communicate that track record and use some of the alternatives where they can benefit from that track record. There's a lot of work done by an awful lot of people to avoid workplace injuries, and that it's a question of making sure that the market is able to recognize that by taking advantage of some of the things I talked about. I'm sure the people in this room are amongst the most expert in dealing with that, but I don't think that necessarily reflects every business in the state who's yet had that opportunity to attack these problems in those same ways. Thank you.
Representative Kitts, do you want to testify and get in the middle of this? Just checking. I wanted to give deference to the House of Representatives.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. That's all the people I had signed up. Is anybody else that wants to join in this fray? And we'll continue this discussion next week. And I appreciate everybody coming down and testifying. And we'll continue to investigate. And thank the committee members. And we will close the public hearing. Is there any good news out there anyplace? Anywhere? It just seems like so many things are out of our control these days. As long as the guy back in Pendleton over the weekend, he was saying, you know, he said, I am just really depressed. There's no good news about anything. That's really true.
Well, no. It's always tomorrow.
Always tomorrow, yeah.
Mr. Gilberay.